I'm Laura Murphy Oates, and this is The Full Story.
We're just recording something for a podcast.
Yeah.
We just need to get a bit of car noises, if that's right. Okay. Thank you.
Last year, in mid-March, myself and producer Ellen Leibeater headed out to South Sydney.
And how much hand sanitizer have you got with you?
We have brought two things of hand sanitizer.
To a small medical practice in a shopping centre to talk to GP Richard Newen.
Hiya, Richard.
How are you?
Should we not be shaking hands? Should we be doing elbow taps?
The outbreak had just begun and no one really knew how bad it was going to get and how it would unfold. Not even frontline health workers like Dr. Newen.
I've come to terms with the fact that if it further spreads, I will get COVID. And for me as a young, fit male, that's fine in a lot of ways, but not all doctors are young and fit.
Part of the reason Dr. Newen was so scared at the time was because of the chaos and confusion that came with being a part of administering widespread COVID testing for the very first time.
If you ask any GP, are you prepared? They'll be like, where's this mythical protective equipment? Because nobody's seen it. There's no kind of consistent guidelines or flow charts or, you know, if this, do that, if this, do that. There's all conflicting information. You know, it's really, really frustrating. And I love being a doctor. It's what I've always wanted to do. But I don't have any tools, any weapons, any armour, leadership, nothing.
A year on, Australia is facing a very different nationwide logistical challenge, rolling out a vaccine. So far, it seems like things have been similarly chaotic on the front line, with Australia running millions of doses behind schedule. Yesterday, frustrations between the states and territories with the speed of the rollout bubbled over.
As Health Minister here in New South Wales, I'm extremely angry, and I know there are other Health Ministers in the country who share similar views. So let me make it very clear, I'm as angry as I have ever been in this 15 months of war against this virus.
Today, the front line of the vaccine rollout. It's Thursday, the 1st of April.
Recording. Okay, I'm good to go.
Cool. How are you? It's been a year since I've seen your face, I would say, a year and a week, I think, exactly, since I came to speak to you.
Yeah. No, I've been good. I think everything's, I'm just enjoying my job now. Again, life's like back to normal at work, pretty much.
What did you think when you first heard that the vaccine was being rolled out? How have you been feeling about it?
To be honest, I didn't think much about the vaccines until I got my first dose at Liverpool Hospital. And it was just like such a process, in a sort of good way. But, you know, you go to Liverpool Hospital, park your car, shuttle bus to the centre, temperature checked, questions asked, registered, sat down in a chair, spoke to a nurse, got the vaccine, got your obs taken, sat down again, spoke to another nurse and got, you know, then talked to a discharge admin person. And that whole process took like an hour. And then the thought that kind of hit me was, how are we going to do that in a medical center kind of setting? Because, you know, we don't have the space, we don't have the manpower to do all of those things.
Before we get into all of the ins and outs of what's happened with the vaccine rollout, I mean, in a sentence or a word, how would you describe what you've seen of the process so far?
I would say I think it's been a huge mess, but not unexpected. And I don't know the non-unexpected part, if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Yeah.
So, Chris, I've spoken to one GP, Richard Newen, who I know you've spoken to as well, and he said the rollout so far has been pretty problematic. I'm wondering if you can talk me through what the federal government said this rollout would look like.
Yeah, sure. So the government came out a little bit earlier this year and said, look, we will administer 60,000 doses of the vaccine in the very first week.
Christopher Norse is a reporter at Guardian Australia.
So that was the last week of February. And they said they'd administer about 4 million doses by the end of March, with the sort of eventual goal to have all of the population done by October. So those were the goals that they first set.
So are we on track to meet those goals?
No, we're not even close. So in the first week, we saw only half of the doses administered that were supposed to be, so around 30,000. And instead of the 4 million we're supposed to have by the end of March, we're sitting at just under 700,000.
That is pretty far out by a couple of million.
Yeah, look, it's pretty bad. It's not great. Although we should say the government did come out in January and release a set of revised targets when it realised that it was going to have some difficulties importing doses from overseas. So it made a revised target of 4 million doses by the end of April. So it basically pushed it back a month.
So what has happened here? What has gone so wrong with this rollout?
So just before we get into that, I guess the first it's just kind of important to understand what the government is trying to do here. So there's two stages that we're currently engaged in this vaccination rollout. There's phase 1A, and mm-hmm. that was the initial stage of the rollout where we got Pfizer vaccinations to the absolute highest priority people. So people in aged care, quarantine and border workers, priority frontline health workers, and residents of disability services. But these were administered both through a combination of sort of hospitals and in outreach teams, so teams going into facilities to administer vaccines.
So how did this first phase go, phase 1A?
So there were quite a few issues in those first couple of weeks, and many of the issues we witnessed were in the aged care part of that first rollout. So the government hired 4 contractors to help with this rollout in aged care. One of those contractors was a company named Healthcare Australia, and it doesn't have a great history, and there were some questions about its selection here. You know, in one incident during this vaccine rollout, one of its doctors erroneously gave two elderly people, an 88-year-old man and a 94-year-old woman, 4 times the recommended dose of the Pfizer vaccine. It later turned out that doctor hadn't done the mandatory training that he was supposed to have done to administer this vaccine, and that led to a really furious response from government. But we were also seeing broader issues as well. So we were seeing a lot of sort of last-minute cancellations. You know, the government was saying, okay, we're going to turn up at your aged care facility tomorrow, and then not showing up, which of course caused chaos and havoc for the staff of those aged care facilities.
So a few issues there with the first rollout, especially in aged care. What about the second phase? What is that?
So that is phase 1B, which started last week on the 22nd of March. So that phase, the goal there is to administer the AstraZeneca vaccine to roughly 6 million Australians. These are still sort of higher priority Australians. So people over the age of 70, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders who are over the age of 55, some healthcare workers who weren't covered in phase 1A, and a bunch of adults who have underlying medical conditions. Now, that cohort, that much bigger cohort, 6 million people, they were to be vaccinated through a large number of GP clinics, which is currently just over 1,000 participating GP clinics, but they'll grow to about 4,000, and 100 Commonwealth-run respiratory clinics and Aboriginal health services as well. So participation in that stage of the rollout was entirely voluntary. So if you were a GP, you put your hand up and said, yes, I want to participate. And, you know, the general population also has to go and seek out that GP to get their vaccination.
So how did the launch of this next phase, 1B, play out?
The first thing that we started to see was that the clinics were undersupplied. So either they didn't have enough of the vaccine, or they simply didn't know how much of the vaccine they were going to get. And that becomes a really significant issue when you're trying to book people in if you don't know how much of the vaccine you've actually got to give. So I spoke to one clinic in Port Stephens in New South Wales. They are a super clinic, so they're huge. They have 11 GPs. They spend about $25,000 getting ready to deliver the vaccine, so they try to transform themselves into kind of a major vaccine hub. It was their intention that they would be doing at least sort of 1,000 doses a day. And they got a letter from government just before the start of phase 1B, and it said to them, you can have 50 doses a week. That would have each of their GPs administering about 4.5 vaccines a week. And, you know, it's just left them sort of questioning, why, when we have such capacity to deliver this vaccine, are we being given so little?
Did the government give a reason why clinics are only getting so many doses a week?
The problem is vaccine protectionism or vaccine nationalism. So what we've seen in Europe is that the European Union has held on to supplies of AstraZeneca that were supposed to come to Australia because it says it needs them more. Anyway, if you look at the scale of the pandemic there as opposed to here, you might agree that they do need them more. But what that's meant for us is that our forecasts for supply of the internationally produced AstraZeneca vaccine are way off. So we've got way less than we thought we would have. And that explains to a fair degree why we're so far behind our targets.
So what else have we seen with this phase of the rollout?
So one of the really big issues is this website that the government has released. So it was released the week before phase 1B started and it caused absolute chaos. So the government announced it in a way in which it instructed, you know, these 6 million people who were a part of phase 1B to go online, you know, check their eligibility, find the nearest clinic and book in. So within an instant, you had GP clinics being completely inundated by people trying to book in for a vaccine. And compounding it all really was that there were only sort of 1,000 GP clinics that were activated at the start of phase 1B. So there will be 4,000 eventually. But one of the real problems here was that people would go on the clinic finder and they could only see 1,000 GP clinics. In many cases, there was only one in a huge town, you know, a huge regional town. So that one GP clinic would get every single resident, you know, in that town calling, trying to make a booking. You know, it was a bit of a mess, I think.
I guess the biggest problem was that, I can't remember the exact date now, but the Wednesday before the rollout was when they put on live the, you know, the online booking system. And that was like, that was a fun day for everyone, I think.
What happened on that day?
Yeah, so the first I heard of it was when the receptionist came in and asked me, what are we doing with the vaccines? I'm getting all these people calling up and I don't know what to say to them. You know, like, you know, like what's happening? Who are we booking in?
Did you know that the website was going to go live that day and that you might get swamped?
No. To me, it was definitely a surprise. And then like, yeah, so we got all these phone calls, like phone was ringing like off the hook to the point where patients couldn't book in via the phone for, you know, normal stuff because the phone just kept ringing and there were not enough phone lines essentially. And patients that weren't our patients either, like just patients from other practices as well, because not every practice was doing it. And then, yeah, and then what ended up happening was within 2 days, like we were already booked out for 3 months.
A GP described it as, you know, a denial of service attack, you know, mounted by the government on GP clinics and their receptionists, because it was kind of this huge flooding of demand to GP clinics that they simply weren't able to deal with and that kind of crippled them and left them unable to do much else except for answer phones and tell people they couldn't give them a vaccine. And so then we found another problem with the website as well. So the government has contracted out the booking component of this service, so, you know, the website that people actually use to book in with a GP, out to a couple of private contractors, one of which is Health Engine. Its website is pretty big, so it runs an online booking service for 70,000 GPs and health practices across the country. Its website was allowing people to book in for their second dose within days of their first. So I tested this out. You could actually go onto their website, book in for a first dose, and then a couple of days later, book in for your second dose. That is insane for a couple of reasons, most significant of which is that this vaccine is at its most effective when there's a 3-month interval between the two doses. And the government has explicitly recommended and told people that there must be a 3-month interval between the doses, or in special cases, a 1-month interval. That was also compounding demand on GP clinics, who were saying, you know, we're getting people book in for their second doses, you know, before we've even started administering the first dose to anybody. And it's like, how is the system allowing this? It doesn't make any sense.
I am getting flashbacks to when we spoke a year ago with a bit of a bungled rollout where those on the front line and GPs like yourself were kind of bearing the brunt of this. Would you say that's a fair description?
I think it's a fair description, and I think it's something that GPs go through a lot. Like, I guess as GPs, we're used to dealing with the brunt of bad bureaucratic decisions, and, you know, and there's no accountability from their point of view because we, as much as we complain, we're still going to do it because we're doctors foremost and we want to help people.
You talk to GPs and you'll hear the same thing over and over, which is them saying, I don't think Australia realises how hard a time we've had over this pandemic. And now they're being asked to really be the central cog in this rollout machine. And it frustrates them to no end when it doesn't go as it should.
Next, are things looking up for the vaccine rollout? So it sounds like there are a few teething issues there. Can we expect that this is going to get better as we continue to roll out the vaccine?
Look, I think things will improve to some degree. It's going to take a bit of time to iron out some of these logistical issues.
I think we plan to roll out whatever we got in as quickly as we could.
Last week, Professor Brendan Murphy, who's the Health Department Secretary, said, you know, this is a huge and complex logistical challenge. I mean, it's just a massive operation trying to distribute this vaccine all over the country.
There have been aspirational numbers that people have talked about had we got lots of vaccines, but I think we've been pragmatic and realistic about this, that we have to roll out the vaccines that we have as safely and quickly as possible. It's not been possible until now to have certainty in planning.
Last week there was a big development. So we finally started to see the release of some of the locally manufactured AstraZeneca vaccine. So that vaccine is manufactured at CSL's facility in Melbourne. And, you know, we had the TGA, the medical regulator, approve the release of the first four batches of that locally manufactured vaccine. And that's really going to boost supply, but also really give us a lot more certainty around supply, which will help with planning.
And it fixes that issue that you mentioned earlier about relying on that international supply.
Yeah, that's really been a problem for Australia in terms of its vaccine distribution. So that this will help us avoid relying on really shaky agreements with overseas countries to import the vaccine. And what the government is saying is really that from here, now that we have local manufacturing kind of off the ground, that the rollout will speed up exponentially. So we're going to see, you know, a faster and a faster rollout.
Chris, a week ago, I would have said that us being behind on the vaccination rollout isn't such a big deal because, you know, we had nearly no local transmission of COVID in the community. But that has changed this week with an outbreak in Brisbane. What are your thoughts on this?
Look, the stakes are getting quite a bit higher, I think, and this has always been the concern of experts is that if we leave the rollout late, we're leaving ourselves exposed to new outbreaks. And what we've seen, of course, is this outbreak in Brisbane. And what we know about that outbreak is that it spread from health workers, a doctor and a nurse at the Princess Alexandra Hospital's COVID ward. There's been a fair bit of controversy around that because they hadn't been vaccinated yet, despite the fact that frontline health workers are supposed to be in 1A, the most high priority stage of the rollout.
Do we know how many of these workers, these high priority workers, have been vaccinated?
The stats are a little difficult, and that's because of the way they are presented by the health department. So the health department releases a lot of stats, but it does it in a way that sort of lumps in frontline health workers with aged care and other aspects of that phase 1A stage of the rollout, which makes it difficult to kind of separate frontline health workers out. But what we do know is that there was a survey of Queensland health workers by the AMA, the Australian Medical Association, and the Australian Salaried Medical Officers Federation, which found about 43% of respondents had not yet had their first COVID vaccination. And 70% of respondents said they had not been properly fit tested for protective face masks when treating COVID patients. And that survey was released last week and was collected around about the time of this outbreak. So really quite significant figures there. And then there's a separate bit of data from the Queensland government, which shows that the number of frontline health workers in Queensland vaccinated has now risen to about 89% this week. So that's quite a significant jump.
So basically figures were much lower a week or so ago when these infections would have happened.
Yeah, that's right. And look, the state's health minister said this is just a case of bad timing.
It's just so unfortunate that this outbreak has occurred when it did. Another month and all of these staff would absolutely have been protected.
And the Queensland health minister has pointed to the supply issues, saying we had to wait for consistency of supply. We had to keep some in supply to give people their second vaccination.
We don't want to vaccinate all of these people and then turn around and say in 21 days' time, sorry, we can't give you your second vaccine, we don't have enough.
Other thing we've seen this week is a bit of blame shifting between the state and federal governments. I mean, who is in the right here? Who's responsible for how this rollout has gone?
Look, the bulk of the responsibility sits with the federal government. So the federal government is responsible for aged care, is responsible for distributing vaccines through GPs. The states are responsible for frontline health workers, and they've been given a certain amount of vaccine from the federal government to do those frontline health workers. But it's really clear from all of the targets that the federal government set itself that it is well behind on, you know, the aged care rollout and is having significant difficulties in terms of delivering vaccines to GPs. So, you know, the federal government might like to blame the states, but they certainly have problems of their own.
I mean, it strikes me that this outbreak kind of illustrates a lot of the issues that we talked about in this episode and that, you know, the flaws in this rollout have really been exposed by what's happened in Brisbane.
Yeah, it really couldn't have come at a worse time, to be honest. And it really does, you know, show the problems with the rollout, you know, that it hasn't been as efficient as it should have been. You know, we're still seeing some delay in terms of getting the vaccine to frontline health workers, which has really put them at risk. And you know, I think that it really just brings home the importance of making sure that we get this rollout right.
That's it for today. Thanks to Richard Nguyen and Christopher Norse for their time. You can read more from both of them at theguardian.com, and we've put some links to pieces that they've written and reporting they've done on the Full Story page. This episode was produced by Ellen Lee Vita, Miles Herbert and Ryan Pemberton. Special thanks to Monica Dell and John Chia. The executive producers of Full Story are Miles Martignoni and Gabrielle Jackson. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave a rating or a review. Okay, catch you tomorrow.